Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
And hello, and very good evening to you, and welcome to the Astronomy Show, where we bring you the latest news and discoveries from all corners of the universe, right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. I'm John Dixon, and usually there are both of us here. There's Ben and myself, but Ben is just, for this week as well, was studying stars from a different latitude for the last week and a bit or so. There we go. So you can also catch us on the world, dublincityfm.ie, and also as a podcast. And of course, we welcome any queries, comments or questions that you may have of an astronomical nature. And you can email us at astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And as always, the text line is 087-977-1032. Now, let's have a quick look to see where the sun is at the moment. Tomorrow morning, it is going to rise at 7:46 a.m. And just if you're interested, it's set earlier on at 18:38. And we're losing 4 minutes and 8 seconds ballpark for the next 2 or 3 days. And then it's going to slow down a little bit as we creep towards December. And of course, the new year as well. Moonrise, let me just see where we are today. Setting moonrise 1916 this evening, so you will get to see that. And it's quite bright at the moment. It's at 96.6%. It's a waning gibbous, so it's just gone over the full moon stage at this stage. And tomorrow morning it will set at 10:54 a.m. Now that's a fine sight, and has been over the last couple of days. There is the morning moonset as sunlight sort of comes into the sky and gives you that bluey hue, and it just changes the dramatics, I suppose, of the moon as well. Now let's have a quick look around the planets and see where they are. Mercury is at its greatest separation, and was just gone past on the 8th of October, so it puts on its best morning show of the year for a few days around this particular time. And Mercury is also quite dim, as we know, before this, so it's a good time to get out with your binoculars or telescope to see that. So it's quite at its furthest distance away from the sun just at the moment. Venus is at superior conjunction with the sun on October the 22nd, so unfortunately you're not going to see Venus this month, but it's not well placed from Ireland again until next year, sadly, so that's Venus is out of the way. Mars, on the other hand, it's a fine evening sight, and I've been watching this over the last week, just creeping out over the trees of where I live as well. It's a lovely sight to see. It's a magnitude of -0.9, which is quite bright, and it crosses above the Crab Nebula in the mid-month. So in around now, for the next few days, if you've never seen the Crab Nebula, that's going to pass over that as well. Jupiter, this is really the planet to see at the moment, -2.7, very bright, and around midnight it's at its highest, and that's very respectable, 36 degrees up from the horizon, meaning a telescope owner should be able to see a good detail on its wide disc, and well worth a look. Now, where are we? We are the 11th. So we had two views of the great red spot earlier on, 3:15 this morning. And again, if you want to see the red spot, because Jupiter spins at 9.5 hours there, just about, you get to see the red spot twice. So tomorrow, again, you can get to see it at 6:57 just because of the daylight hours. And you can catch that on the internet if you want to, anywhere at all, if you're a red spot spotter. There we go. Saturn, on the other hand, is just at +0.6. It's an evening planet this month. And it sets at 1:50 a.m. mid-month, which is in coming up to around now. And it's a good fun one to watch as well, though it's not that bright just at the moment. Uranus and Neptune, again, they're quite hard to see. And tomorrow, if you are interested in seeing where Uranus is, it's just at the 11 o'clock mark tomorrow at 7 a.m. in the morning. And it's very, very close to the moon, which is lit at 94% as dawn breaks. So if you want to get your telescope out or a really good pair of binoculars, that's the thing to see. So Neptune, it was at opposition on September the 15th in Aquarius, so it's an evening object this month. And unfortunately, the moon doesn't get particularly close to Neptune, so it's quite hard to see. You've got to go Googling to find that as well. Now, at the moment, we are, well, I'd say we've started from October the 2nd until November the 7th, the Orionid meteor shower. And this one is a particularly reasonable shower, producing probably 20 to 30 meteors an hour in ideal conditions. And the peak is very broad with the night of the 20th, 21st and 22nd of October. And, of course, the peak of that would be the 21st into the 22nd, and you want to get out about midnight, get yourself ready with your cup of tea, your lilo, your chair, whatever you have, and watch for the Orionids, which are from the comet Halley. That's Halley's comet, and this is the cause of this particular show. It's a very, very wide tail on Halley's comet, and it stretches way back to October the 2nd to November the 7th, so we get a good blast through that as well. And if you like solar eclipses or partial solar eclipses, on Tuesday morning, October the 25th, Ireland will witness a partial solar eclipse, and you can view it safely if you take precautions. And, of course, we advise that you should never look directly into the sun, just get yourself some solar filters. You can also use the pinhole method, which is literally just taking an A4 sheet of paper, just putting a pinhole on it and a piece of paper on the ground, and just putting it in front of the sun, and it projects it straight onto the paper. It's a remarkably simple way of seeing the solar eclipse. So we only get to see a partial, which is about 40%. Maybe slightly less of that of the sun's diameter will be covered by the moon. So there's some interesting things just to see over this coming month. And I will advise, or we will advise, Ben and I next week about the Orionid meteor showers. We're coming up to the peak as well. So if you're interested in going to see Chris Hadfield, and he, of course, was one of the ISS, the International Space Station, astronauts, and a very interesting person he is as well. October 25th of June next year. That's June 2023. You can join Canadian astronaut and ex-commander of the International Space Station, and he will have a mind-expanding evening of exploration, imagery, stories, and music score. And what does this new age of travel mean? And what can it bring to life here on Earth? Oh, I have my tickets. Booked them a good while ago, and so if you want to do that, you can Google the Onboard Gosh Theatre or similar places to get your tickets as well. Now, just running over to China just for a moment, and they have successfully launched two test satellites from the launch platform in the Yellow Sea on Friday, and that's Friday last, and it's the Centispace S5/S6 test satellites with the Low Earth Orbit Satellite Navigation and Enhancement System. And they lifted off by a Long March 11 carrier rocket at 9 p.m. Beijing time. You could probably knock about 9 hours off that, so that would have been midday or thereabouts. And they successfully entered orbit, so that's good to see there as well. Now, Mengtian, M-E-N-G-T-I-A-M, this is the Space Lab, and it's being fueled ahead of the upcoming launch. And the propellant injection work on this Mengtian Space Lab, this is the second lab component for the China's Tiangong Space Station, and it was conducted yesterday morning at the Wenchang Space Launch Center in Hainan Province, according to the China Space Agency. And it's quite a heavy rocket to lift this up. In fact, if you can see the actual piece of the station itself. It's a big piece of kit. It's 17 metres long, has a diameter of 4 metres and weighs 20 metric tons. So we need something really heavy to get that to lift into the sky. Now, you're listening to The Astronomy Show right here, 103.2 Dublin City FM. And the text line, as always, 087-977-1032. And I'll be checking emails and texts and all sorts of things as we go through the program as well. Just keeping up to where we are with Mars at the moment, the InSight lander, that's NASA's InSight lander, waits out a dust storm at the moment. And it's expected to end in the near future. And this is the time of year, well, certainly for us, that this happens on Mars. And the powers that be have seen a recent drop in power generated by its solar panels as the continent-sized dust storm swirls over Mars. And these are some dust storms, and they lay there for weeks on end. It started on the 21st of September 2022, which is just a number of weeks ago. And the storm is roughly 2,175 miles wide, or 3,500 kilometers wide, and it initially had little impact on the lander, but unfortunately now the dust has settled and they're losing a little bit of power, and they're hoping maybe that, as usual, there could be a couple of these dust devils at the end, which might help to generate power as the sun comes back in as well. So it's dropped about 40% of its power. And that's because there's less sunlight reaching the lander's panels. And it fell from 425 watt-hours per Martian day to 275 watt-hours per sol. Just want to slip back a little bit further in time now to where the dinosaurs were. And they're now saying that the impact that killed the dinosaurs triggered a mega earthquake that seemingly lasted for weeks to months. They come up with this as well. 66 million years, a 10-kilometer asteroid hit Earth, triggering the extinction of the dinosaurs. And the new evidence found just recently suggests that the Chicxulub impact also triggered an earthquake so massive that it shook the planet for weeks to months after the collision. And the amount of energy released in this mega earthquake is estimated, if you're working in joules, is 1,023, which is about 50,000 times more energy than was released in the magnitude 9.1 Sumatra earthquake in 2004. So that was a pretty, pretty big earthquake, and gave the Earth a right good shaking as well. And just talking about asteroids, the mystery of the Arizona's meteor crater has been solved. And if I don't know if any of you have seen the pictures on books or on the telly or anything like that, the space rock that carved the meteor crater in Arizona hit the planet seemingly more slowly than astronomers have once figured, but still 10 times as fast as a rifle bullet. So it still came in pretty quickly. And the new analysis announced today that it explains why there's a lot less melted rock in the crater than expected. And the mystery has dogged researchers for years because of this. And this big hole in the ground, which at some stage I would love to go and see, and indeed I've seen it as programs where Professor Brian Cox has been on the edge of it. So it's quite a big hole. It's 1.25 kilometers across. It's 570 feet deep and was blown into existence about 50,000 years ago by an asteroid roughly just 130 feet or 40 meters wide, whichever way you want to make your calculations. So they reckon it came smacking into the planet at about 12 kilometers per second, which is roughly 26,800 miles per hour. And it's a very popular tourist destination at the moment, and was the first scar on Earth confirmed to have been gouged by a rocky visitor from beyond. And it's probably at this stage the most studied impact crater on Earth. And the powers that be, or the people studying, were astonished to discover something entirely unexpected on how it formed. So where they come with this, I do not know, but they're evidently tracking and calculating the way that meteors hit the Earth. Now, I'm afraid to mention the C word, which is Christmas coming up very shortly, and I just came across this very interesting little thing. It's called an Enkalife Ambience Galaxy Star Projector. And it only costs about $60. I'm not sure what it costs over here. And it's on discount at the moment. So if you're in the market for a new star projector, or you want to write to the little fellow in the red suit with the beard, then this is the thing for you. And similarly, it's about the same size as a fruit bowl. And you control it by remote control, and it projects all the stars. I'm not sure how many exactly it has, but it certainly projects an awful lot of stars under the ceiling. I'm going to have a little look at this and see if I can wangle one of these for Christmas as well. Anyway, you're listening to 103.2 Dublin City FM, and I'm John Dixon until 8:30 this evening. I shall be back in just a moment.
Taste, all you feel, and all that you love, and all that you hate, all you distrust, all you say, and all that you give, and all that you deal, and all that you buy, big, borrow, or steal, and all you create, and all you destroy. And all that you do, and all that you say, and all that you eat, and everyone you meet, and all that you slight, and everyone you fight, and all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in you.
And welcome back to the Astronomy Show right here, 103.2 Dublin City FM. Mr. John Dixon here until 8 p.m. and glad to have your company. Now, I did mention last week I wanted to speak about the space stations that we've had and just give you a little comparison of what they look like. So we had first the Skylab in May the 14th, 1973. It was launched by a modified Saturn V rocket. It launched pad in the LC-39A in the Kennedy Space Center. And it came back down as was deorbited in July the 11th, 1979. It was 82.4 feet long, so it was quite large for one of the first ones. Its width was 55.8 feet, and its height was 36.3. It ran at an atmospheric pressure of 5 pounds per square inch. Its orbital height was between 269.7 and 276.4 miles. Its orbital inclination was quite high at 50 degrees. And it went around the Earth in 93.4 minutes. So, in fact, it did 15.4 orbits per day. Its time in orbit was 2,249 days, and it was occupied for 171 days of that time. And the completion and number of orbits that it did before it was deorbited was 34,981. And it travelled 1.4 billion kilometres. So it was launched, as I say, in 1973. And it was operated by three separate astronaut crews, Skylab 2, Skylab 3, and Skylab 4. You probably remember all those names if you're of that particular generation. And some of its major operations included the orbital workshop, a solar observatory, some Earth observation, and hundreds of experiments. It doesn't go into the list of what they were. Unfortunately, it was unable to be reboosted by the Space Shuttle at the time, which was not ready until 1981, of course, and Skylab's orbit eventually decayed and it disintegrated in the atmosphere all by itself on July the 11th, 1979, scattering debris all across the Indian Ocean and Western Australia. And quite an interesting shape as well. It looked like a windmill on its side, really, with a solar panel just on the windmills and just to the bottom right as well. So that's the Skylab. Now, the Mir one was a little bit more complicated. It had a couple of arms and legs thrown in for good measure as well. It was launched in the 20th of February 1986 and was decommissioned in the 23rd of April 1996 as well. And its mass, just to give you the weight of it, although it was weightless up there, 129,700 kilos. It was 19 metres in length. Its width was 31 metres. Its height was 27. And it was quite a fascinating thing to watch, and you should have a little look as well. And the altitude was a little bit lower than the Skylab at 189 miles to 216, a little bit higher in its orbital inclination at 51.6, and it travelled at 17,200 miles per hour, and its orbital period was a little bit slower than the Skylab at 91.9 minutes, and it had 15.7 orbits per day, and its days in orbit, 15 years and 31 days, and its which was 5,510. It was occupied for much of this at 4,592, and it completed 86,331 orbits. And I remember when this came down, actually. It's it was remarkable to see. And the station served as a microgravity research laboratory in which the crews conducted experiments in biology, human biology, physics, astronomy, meteorology, and spacecraft systems with a goal of developing technologies required for permanent occupation in space, which leads us to the International Space Station, which is the one that we have up there at the moment. They're looking at extending it out a little bit further. And indeed, the Russians want to extend their contract with the US as well to add a little bit more time onto this. At the moment, fully crewed, it's normally seven. And currently boarded at the moment, as from yesterday, was 11, which is quite a lot for this spacecraft. There's a lot of food, liquids, and air being breathed in and out up there as well. Its launch date, if we remember that one, was 20th of November 1998. And it was launched from the Baikonur site, and its mass was, this is a big one, this is 444,615 kilograms. It weighs a little bit more now. Its length, 73 meters. Its width, 109 meters. And it's in orbit around 256.6 miles above our head. They have to adjust it every now and again just to give it a little kick start to get it back off, or indeed avoid space junk that may be up there as well. Its orbital inclination, much the same as the other two, 51.64. Its orbital speed, 17,100 miles per hour, which seems to be much the same as they do. It goes around the Earth in 92.68, so it's quite quick, and it does 15.4 orbits per day. So it stays in orbit up to October the 10th, that was yesterday, is 23 years, 10 months, and 20 days. And its occupation time is 21 years, 11 months, and 8 days. So it's done at this stage 133,312 orbits since June 2022, and its orbital decay, just in case you're interested, is about 2 kilometers per month. So it's with the gravity here we have here on Earth, it sneaks or tries to sneak quietly back to Earth here in the microgravity it sits in, but unfortunately they have to boost it every now and again. So it consists of a pressurized habitation module in all sorts of different directions for the Americans and the Russians and everybody else. It has structural trusses, photovoltaic solar arrays, thermal radiators, docking ports, experiment bays and robotic arms, And the major ISS modules have been launched by the Russian Proton and Soyuz rockets and, of course, the US space shuttles in the beginning. And the station is serviced by a variety of visiting spacecraft, namely the Russian Soyuz, the Progress, the SpaceX Dragon 2, and the Northrop Grumman Space System Cygnus, and formerly the European Automated Transfer Vehicle, ATV. And that's most of the stuff that's up there. So it's used for getting bits and pieces back up and down here to Earth in a good, normal matter, and safe as well, of course, as well. So anyway, we're rapidly running out of time, unfortunately, this Tuesday evening. Just a quick word before we go. The SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket aborts and aborted the double satellite launch at the last minute, and the SpaceX rocket just 30 seconds before liftoff on October the 7th, I think was last Friday, and just for safety reasons, so I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen after that. And of course, keeping our eyes on the November launch for the Artemis mission as well. They're looking at between the 12th and 17th of November. So we're looking forward to that as well. Anyway, that's just about it from me for this evening's program. That email address for comments and questions is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Ben, of course, be back with us next week, and looking forward to that as well, see what he has to say for himself. And thanks as ever to James Sweeney for making the show available as a podcast, and to Conor Lennon for making it available on astronomy.ie. And next week, of course, we'll have the same again. So it's for me, from this particular edition of the Astronomy Show right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. We have Hello China, which is next, 9 p.m. We have Threads with Bren Linet, and Ear to the Globe with Nigel Wood, and he has his collection of eclectic world music. Midnight After Hours with Dave Barry, with the jazz, blues and soul until 2 a.m. So please join myself and Ben same time next week, and be back with the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care. See you next week. Thanks for listening. Say goodnight, John, and goodnight, John. Bye bye.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.